John chapter 4. I came across some genuine newspaper ads that I thought I would share with you, where the wording isn't quite as it should be. And they tickled me, maybe they'll tickle you. One ad said this: three puppies, half cocker spaniel, half sneaky next door neighbour's dog. Or this one: dog for sale, eats everything and is fond of children. Or this one: complete Encyclopedia Britannia, 45 volumes for sale, excellent condition, £300 or best offer, no longer needed, got married last weekend, wife knows everything. My favourite is this one. It's an American advert, and it says this: used tombstone, perfect for someone called Homer Hendel Bergen Hines. And if that's not unique enough, he then puts one only. So if you're up to call Homer Hendel Bergen Hines and you're looking for a tombstone, there's one on offer. Or this one: lost dog, blind in one eye, missing right ear, recently castrated, answers to the name Lucky. Cast your mind back to that one I gave you earlier. Dog for sale, it eats anything and is fond of children. And of course, as you ponder that, it's got two meanings, hasn't it? It's kind of saying, look, here's a dog that will eat anything and it's very good with children. It's fond of children. It's affectionate towards children. But if you read it slightly odd, it's saying, here's a dog that actually likes to eat children. So depending on how you read the wording, you get one of two meanings. Now, John's Gospel is a little bit like that advert. It has two meanings to it whenever you read it. John in his Gospel wants his readers to examine the book. And yes, there are straightforward stories, but actually behind them, there is an alternative meaning, a deeper meaning, if you look that a little bit deeper. Now, we're going to look at John 4, so keep a finger there. But if you've got a Bible open, just flick towards the back of John's Gospel to chapter 20, just for a moment. And in John chapter 20, verse 30, we have kind of a conclusion, a summary verse to why John wrote this book. And in John chapter 20, verse 30, we read these words: Jesus' disciples saw him do many other miraculous signs besides the one recorded in this book. So in other words, Jesus did lots and lots of miracles. And of course, Matthew, Mark and Luke tell us about some of those other miracles. John says, I haven't recorded everything. But notice what he says: but these are written. Now, what are the these? John has been editing, and he deliberately picked out from the many miracles Jesus did, seven. And they're a bit like seven pieces of a jigsaw puzzle. And when you put these seven miracles together, you get one complete picture of who Jesus Christ is. So John says, look, I could have included a whole host of things Jesus did, but I haven't. I've been quite deliberate. I've only picked seven miracles. And if you read John's Gospel, that's all you find. Seven miracles. Why did he choose those seven? Well, he goes on to tell us: so that you may believe. So that you may believe. Well, believe what? He tells us. Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God. But don't stop there. This is more than information John is communicating. He doesn't want you to pass a test this morning and to go out saying, do you know what, before I came to Efford Christian Fellowship, I didn't believe Jesus was the Son of God, and when I left, I did. Some people have those experiences. C.S. Lewis, the great author, often known for the Chronicles of Narnia, what a brilliant collection of writings, and of course many other books. One of the only authors whose works have never gone out of print, always remained in print. He tells the story of how one Sunday, I don't know what day it was actually, one morning he was driven on a motorbike to Twycross. They were having an outing to Twycross. And he says this: when I got on the motorbike, I did not believe Jesus was the Son of God. Now, it wasn't because of bad driving. He just had time to reflect and to think and to ponder. And he states this in his autobiography. When I got to the zoo, when I got off that motorbike, I was convinced Jesus was the Son of God. Just in that short journey, as he thought through those stories and sayings and what he'd heard about Jesus, it got him to that conclusion that Jesus was the Son of God. But information alone didn't save anyone. It's the application of truth. And so John concludes that you might believe Jesus is the Son of God, and by believing, by exercising trust, by exercising faith in him, you will have life. There's an end result to information. It has to be applied to be any good. So at the end of his gospel, John says, look, I've deliberately chosen 7 miracles. They're like pieces of a jigsaw puzzle. Put them together and you will see Jesus is more than a good man, more than a prophet. He is the Son of God. And if you apply what Jesus said and you put your faith in him, you too will experience life. Everlasting. Everlasting. So there are 7 signs, and we're going to look at one of them today. The first sign was the first miracle, chapter 2, the wedding at Cana. And we see Jesus turning water into wine. I guess we see his power over creation. He can take the creation and change it. Wow, I could do that, you could do that. But in this miracle, a different truth is coming. We see his power over distance. Here is somebody ill 20 miles away from where Jesus is. And yet he gives the word and that boy is healed. Distance is not a barrier to Jesus. Now I'm glad about that. Because the Bible tells me at this very moment Jesus resides in heaven. And that's a long way away. But distance is not a barrier to divinity. The sun is 92.96 miles away from planet Earth. That's a long way, folks. 92.96 miles away from planet Earth. Do you know what? Every year I get sunburnt. That's how close it is. It may be distant, but it's very, very close. And Jesus may be in heaven, but he's only a prayer away. Distance is not a barrier to divinity. And this morning, if we, like the man in this story, exercise trust, realise who Jesus is, put our faith in him, we can experience his touch in our lives, even this morning. I want to divide the chapter up under a number of headings. Here's the first one. The beginnings of faith. That's verse 46. The beginnings of faith. While Jesus was in Galilee, he returned to the village of Cana, where he had turned the water into wine. There was an official in Capernaum whose son was sick. The first miracle, water into wine, came as a request from a woman, his mother. They've ran out of wine. They're going to be embarrassed. Can you do something? The second miracle comes after a request from a dad, a man, a father. Now, we're not told if the man was Jew or Gentile. We don't know his exact position in government. He would appear perhaps to be a member of Herod's court. That meant he would have had great influence and power. We would say today he was a somebody. A somebody. It would also mean he would have been a man of great wealth. People would have envied him. And he probably had everything he needed to live a comfortable life. And yet there was one thing he wanted that his position and his wealth could not buy. He wanted his boy to be healed. He was a man of means. No doubt he'd tried every solution that money could buy. The best physicians. But they couldn't cure his son. And you perhaps know the old saying that money can buy medicine but not health. Money can buy the best of healthcare, but it can't buy healing. And like many of us who have stood next to a loved one, like this dad, we would have given anything. Anything at all to see that child well. Yesterday I was at a funeral for one of my colleagues, John Hall. Some of you may have known John from the past. At the same time in Derbyshire, a friend of mine was burying his 12-year-old girl. 12-year-old girl. I was on camp with her in the summer. Full of health, full of vitality. 12 years old. Beautiful girl. but she became ill just before Christmas. And they didn't realise, but she had a very rare breathing problem, and she stopped breathing, and she died. And yesterday was her Thanksgiving service. And I tell you, when I read about that this week, or a couple of weeks ago, it broke my heart. My own son's 12 years old. How do you respond? You'd give anything. This man would have done. He wouldn't have walked 20 miles. He'd have walked 200 or 2,000 miles if it meant his son getting well. And that was his only option. Could the carpenter, could the healer bring life to his child? It'd take a great step of faith. As somebody, what, going to a nobody, a self-imposed preacher. But this wasn't just anybody. And so he went. So first of all, we've got the beginnings of faith. Secondly, we've got the approach of faith. That's verse 47. When the man heard that Jesus had arrived in Galilee from Judea, he went to him and begged him to come and heal his son, who was close to death. Well, when you watch someone go through pain, through illness, it's difficult. It brings anxiety. We even wish we were perhaps, it would be great, wouldn't it, if we could take the pain and they could be released. But that can't happen. Martin Luther was the great reformer, great Christian man of the past. God our Father has made all things depend on faith, on trust. So that whoever has faith will have everything. And whoever does not have faith will have nothing. See, here's a man of influence. Normally if he gives a command, people jump. He's a government official, maybe even a royal official. He's got money, he's got prestige. But Jesus is never impressed with money or prestige. What Jesus looks for is faith. And if someone is willing to exercise faith, they can reap the rewards. And there's a principle in the Bible from start to finish. Without faith, it is impossible to please God. But with faith, all things. What, even a dying child? Yeah, all things are possible. But notice how he come. He came and he begged. That tells me he came humbly. He could have come and said, look, I'm an official. I'm part of the royal household. You're a carpenter turned preacher. I'm a somebody. You're a nobody. Now, come on. Heal my daughter. He could have come with his bags of money saying, look, this is yours if you help. But he didn't. He came and he just humbled his heart. And he kind of said, look, I've got nothing to bargain with. Please help my child. And Jesus always responds to faith. You see that again and again in the Gospels. About 2 years ago, I took my family to Israel. And we hired a car and we kind of pottered around Israel for a couple of weeks. And I took them into Bethlehem because I wanted to show them at the shepherd fields just as you get to Bethlehem. And then just one or two tourist spots in Bethlehem. And when we got there, I said to my kids, now we're going to the church in the Nativity. They will tell you that's the very place Jesus was born. In fact, there's a star on the floor and you'll see people kissing it and touching it. And they tell you that's the exact spot. I said, nonsense. We know Jesus was born in Bethlehem, but we don't know where. And these people are just guessing. That's blind faith. I said, but I want to show you something on the way in that I think is more important than anything else. And as you go in, there is a door. It's only 4 foot by 2 foot. If you want to go into the Church of the Nativity, no huge doors like on most other churches, just a very small door, 2 foot wide, 4 foot high. It was built by when the Crusaders were there, so it doesn't go all the way back to when Jesus was born. And it was built to stop people riding in on horse and kind of killing people, so that people had to dismount off their horse and it was easier to defend. So that's why they built a very small door. And here's the point. This is the point I made to my kids, and tourist guides make it to anyone. When you come to Jesus, you don't come in your pride. You have to bow down to enter. The only way you can enter that door is to bow down and walk through. And this man came bowing down, begging, humble. And you and I are welcome into the presence of Jesus, but not in our pomp and ceremony, not in our pride. We come humbly or we don't come at all. And the Bible says God resists the proud, but boy, does he show grace to the humble. And if we come humble, we can experience his touch this morning. Here's the third thing that strikes me in the story. We have the rebuke of faith, verse 48. Jesus said, unless you people see miraculous signs and wonders, you will never believe. You will never believe. You've probably heard of Sir Walter Raleigh. He's well known in certain parts of the country. But he once made a request to the Queen. And as he made his request, she gave this response. Raleigh, when will you ever stop begging? In other words, every time I see you, it's give, give, give. Can I have? Can I have? Can I have? And the Queen said to him, Raleigh, when will you ever stop begging? And his reply is insightful. He said this, when your majesty stops giving. When your majesty stops giving. Do you know what? His request was granted. His request was granted. Listen, we have a God who we never exhaust his resources. We are coming to a king with the great petitions bring. Do you know what? Our God is generous. Now, he may not answer the way we want. He may say, no, that's selfish. No, that's not right for that individual or that situation. But we never exhaust his resources. They are boundless. And God's grace never is exhausted. Years ago, that song, Amazing Grace, we sang it earlier on in our first service. At least twice, I think maybe three times, the hymn Amazing Grace has been number one in what was the old pop charts. They don't have them now, it's all downloads. But when they used to have Top of the Pops, at least three times Amazing Grace made number one. And on the last occasion it was number one, that you had to go to the shop and buy a piece of plastic, a record. No downloading from iTunes, you got the actual physical bit of plastic. Stuart still got them, probably. 78s or 45s. But one shop, a bit like H&V, had got a sign up in the window. And it said this on the sign, Amazing Grace, out of stock. Amazing Grace, out of stock. We've sold all our copies, there's no more. And you can see the point I'm making. Listen, God's amazing grace, he's never out of stock. It never runs out. It is available to those who come by faith and those who come humbly. And if you're prepared to come that way this morning, if you've never put your trust in the Lord, then do it today. You can't earn it. You can't buy it. You just come and say, Lord, I don't deserve it. In your mercy, in your goodness, speak to me. Hear my plea. Answer my prayer. Fourthly, we've got the rewards of faith. Actually, with the rebuke of faith, it wasn't to the man. You notice that. It was to the crowd. He said, you people, you're all looking for signs and miracles. And if you just come for the show, you're not going to get one. Because I'm not an entertainer. I'm Emmanuel, God with you. If you want entertainment, go elsewhere. See, people were following Jesus for what they could get out of him. Do a miracle. Want to see something spectacular. And this miracle, in answer to the man's need, is private. Only he and his household saw it. Not the crowd. Because Jesus doesn't perform to entertain. He performs, if that's the right word, to meet needs. And so he says, you lot are looking for miracles? Not today. Not today. And he dealt with the man and he dealt with the situation privately, with dignity. And salvation is a personal thing, isn't it? See, I look out. I don't know if you're saved or not this morning. You know. It's an issue between you and God. But although it's private, it's not to remain a secret, as we'll see later on in the story. We believe, that's personal and private, and then we confess before others. That's when it becomes public. But Jesus was not an entertainer. He was Emmanuel, God with us. So he rebuked the crowd and said, look, there are more important issues at stake than seeing miracles. And of course, the greatest miracle we ever see is the conversion of a soul. When someone is made right with God. Then we have the rewards of faith, verse 50. The royal officer said, sir, come down before my child. Look, you're the only hope. Come. It's a 20-mile journey, but if you don't come, what hope is there? Go, Jesus replied. Your son will live. Now, look, don't miss this. The man took Jesus at his word and departed. That's faith. That's faith. The man took Jesus at his word and departed. See, he came and he made two mistakes. His first mistake was this. Jesus, you've got to come to Capernaum to heal my son. His second mistake was this. If you don't come now, it'll be too late. But he leaves with nothing more than the promise of Jesus. And actually, that's all you need. That's all you need. He leaves with the promise of Jesus. Go home. The healing has already taken place. For the crowds, it's total disappointment. We thought he'd do something special. But for the man, I think he left on cloud nine. Why? Because he took the promise of Jesus and he applied it. I was telling our youth group Friday, I was talking to them on Noah and the verse, God remembered Noah. And the fact that God traffics in truth. If God says it, he will do it. He never uses the words, oh well, promises are broken. We use those. And the point I made to them, and I share it with you because it fits in here, is this. That a promise is only as good as the one who made it. See, I could go home from Plymouth, see my kids tomorrow and say, kids, guess what? On Saturday, we're off to Disneyland. Where do you want to go? Paris or Orlando? Orlando, no problem. Pack your cases. Saturday morning, we're off to Disneyland. Saturday morning comes, they come down the stairs with their suitcases. Where's Dad? What, still in bed? They come up, Dad, get up. I thought we were going to Orlando. Oh, sorry, kids. Haven't got the money, haven't got the desire, haven't got the time. They'd be heartbroken. See, I can make a promise, but I haven't got the ability to fulfill that promise. A promise is only as good as the one who made it. He took the promise of Jesus, the word of Jesus, and he believed it. And when you take the word of Jesus, he never, ever fails. He is trustworthy. He always keeps his word. And this man, well, I think he was a man of great faith. Great faith. Because at that very moment, on the word of Jesus, he returns home. He returns home. Someone has said this, how many times I failed to do that? I know what Jesus had said, but I failed to take him at his word. I believe my word over his word. I take the word of others over his word. I ignore his word. I pretend I don't hear his word, or that it doesn't apply to my situation. I forget his word. I'm too busy to listen to his word, too distracted. So often that is our response, isn't it? But if he says it, it is trustworthy. Hold on to it. And without any visible sign, any visible evidence, the man says, if Jesus said it, that's good enough for me. He said to his servants, let's go. Let's go. The rewards of faith. And then finally, the confirmation of faith. Verse 51 to 53. While he was still on the way, his servants met him with the news that his boy was living. When he inquired as to the time when his son would get better, they said, the fever left him yesterday at the seventh hour. Then the father realized this was the exact time at which Jesus had said, your son will live. The great Christian Augustine, one of the early church fathers, said this, faith is to believe what we do not see, and the reward of this faith is to see what we believe. Let me give you that again. Faith is to believe what we do not see, and the reward of this faith is to see what we believe. Hey, the boy was healed instantly at the word of Jesus. Now, 20 miles is a long way home. You wouldn't do it in one day. In Bible times, you probably walked in the heat of the day. No one ever travelled at night. It was too dangerous. That's when the bandits and the robbers were out. So you had to walk in the day in the heat of the sun. And on average, you walked 10 miles a day. If you're doing anything more than 10 miles, you were in fifth gear and breaking the speed limit. So you normally walk 10 miles a day. So he must have had an overnight stop somewhere. Do you think he had a peaceful night or a restless night? When he put his head down, do you think he thought, my son's okay, I'll have a good night's kit? Or do you think he sat up, is he going to be all right? He's going to be all right. Should I have asked them? Should I have done? I think he had a peaceful night. And the next day, he didn't even have to wait till he got home. The servants met him on the road. And they said, your boy is healed. He took Jesus at his word. And then that step of faith was confirmed. I said that was the last one, but you can have this one for free, okay? Here's the last one. Then you have the spread of faith, verse 53. So he and all his household believed. Faith may start private, but sooner or later you have to make it public. And this man took the word of Jesus, he applied it to his situation, and as a result, he then shared the news of how the boy was healed. And because he shared the news, it's about Jesus. They too believe. They too exercise faith. That's what we're about, aren't we, as Christians? If you've had the touch of Jesus in your life, you need to share that with someone. And if you haven't shared it recently, that's your homework this week. Who am I going to share the good news with Jesus? And to help you, on the table at the back are some of these booklets called By Jesus. You can pop that in your pocket, inside your Bible. And this week, ask the Lord, Lord, who can I give that to? Maybe the person who's next to you on the bus when you say good morning, you strike up a conversation. Maybe if you're walking through the park and there's someone on a bus. When you go to the garage and you fill up and it's late and you've got that guy who's just sat there, brain dead, 2 o'clock in the morning, nothing to do. Say, hey, have a read of that. Pass it on to someone. Share the good news of Jesus. And if possible, share your experience. This is what the Lord has done for me. Can I just take, just in a couple of minutes, tell you what the Lord has done for me? Hey, share that good news. There is nothing like it. Nothing like it. And all you've got to do is like the blind man. I love the blind man of John chapter 9, my favourite chapter in the Bible. No loads of explanations. He just said this. Hold on. He said, look, I don't know how he did it. All I know is this. Once I was blind, now I can see. And if you're a Christian, you can say that. Once I was blind, I didn't know about God. I didn't know about Jesus. These things didn't make sense. I was in the dark. But when I made a step of faith and invited the Lord into my life, someone turned the lights on. Now I know the Lord. I know what he's done for me. I know his friendship day by day. And if you've never shared that before, you share it. You share it. It's too good not to share. It's a great little story, this. You have the beginnings of faith, the approach of faith, the rebuke of faith, the rewards of faith, the confirmation of faith, and then the spread of faith. You kind of get the impression faith's important, don't you? And it is, because without faith, it is impossible to please God. Here's my punchline. Have you got faith in Jesus? John Hall, we buried yesterday. Francesca, the 12-year-old girl, had her Thanksgiving service yesterday. Do you know where they are? They're in the presence of Jesus, because they both loved him. If it was your service yesterday, where would you be? In the presence of Jesus? Or do you have to hear him say, sorry, depart from me. I never knew you. Look, we're not playing around this morning, are we? These are eternal issues. And if you've yet to take that step of faith, I urge you with all my heart, do it. Do it. Humble your heart. Say, oh God, be merciful to me, a sinner. I don't deserve it, but because of Jesus and what he did on the cross, I'm going to put all of my eggs in one basket. I'm going to put all my hope in him. Live in Lord Jesus. Come into my life. Turn me around. Change me. And help me to follow you, not to be ashamed. Begin into faith. And enjoy that journey. Let's pray. Yes.